Deutsche Welle, World in Progress.
On this program, ahead of the Rio Plus 20 summit, we take a look at alternative ways of dealing with nature and its resources. The Bolivian concept of vivir bien.
We have to change direction. We have to rethink life. That's vivir bien.
We learn about a project demanding clean mobile phones.
Nous les appelons minéraux de sang.
We call them blood minerals because the only way to get them is through violence and suffering. I dream that a democratic land like Germany will enact a law that will only allow for imports of certified minerals.
And we find out how fair trade has helped coffee growers in Mexico.
Comercio justo nos califica también el...
Fair trade has also shown us that we are the people who have been helped by the work. We have been treated well. With the harvest and all the other work, you have to be able to have help.
Welcome to World in Progress. I'm Anke Raspa in Bonn. Next week, delegates from all around the globe meet in Brazil for the Rio Plus 20 summit. Since the first Rio meeting, 2 decades ago, the idea of sustainable development and the importance of finding new ways of economic growth with protecting the environment have become part of a global discussion. Is the culture of capitalism the only option in the modern world? Some Bolivians say no, and they're putting forward the philosophy of vivir bien as an alternative. Sara Shahrari reports from La Paz.
Vivir bien connotes respect for life. Life is living together. And how am I going to live? Am I going to live disturbing things? Am I going to live by force? Or am I going to live in harmony and balance?
That's Fernando Wainakuni, an Aymara Indian intellectual who's written extensively about vivir bien. The concept became high profile with the election of Aymara Indian Evo Morales, the first indigenous president, in 2005. More than half of Bolivia's 10 million inhabitants identify with one of more than 30 indigenous groups. The concept of vivir bien is derived from indigenous traditions and values, referring to harmonious living, good life, or the land without evil. Since 2009, the Bolivian constitution defines the country as
a state based on respect and equality between all, with principles of sovereignty, dignity, complementarity, solidarity, harmony and equity in the distribution and redistribution of social product, where the search for vivir bien predominates.
Reaching from the tropical rainforests of the Amazon to the Andean Mountains, Bolivia is a diverse country in many respects. And ideas on what exactly vivir bien means vary widely. Laja is a small town ringed by distant glacier-capped mountains, where most people live by raising dairy cows and small-scale farming. It seems vivir bien is the way of life in Laja, as people work the land in a sustainable way, live simply, and maintain deep ties to community and family. But if you ask people what vivir bien means to them, or the government, many people haven't heard the phrase. In fact, vivir bien seems more a deeply rooted lifestyle than something the average person is thinking about. Rigoberto Rios Miranda is milking his small herd of dairy cows in Laja. He is a spry, elderly man whose first language is Aymara. Rios Miranda follows politics in newspapers, and he says the government is moving Bolivia toward vivir bien by investing in projects that are important to the country.
Vivir bien, yes, of course. More or less, things have changed with this government. It's something different from before, I think, and I'm not a follower of anyone. I'm independent. I work in the countryside, so I need to watch who's governing well and who isn't. And Brother Evo, who is indigenous, seems good to me. There are development projects, there are houses, there are new planes for the Air Force, there are trucks. He has done good things.
The government also embraced the idea of redistributing the country's natural resource wealth, which historically benefited very few people in what remains one of South America's poorest countries. By pushing for more income from oil, gas, and mining operations, the country became more financially secure, and the government began giving small amounts of cash to the elderly, mothers, and students. Most government offices are concentrated downtown in the city of La Paz. It's just an hour's drive from rural Laja, but the city is dominated by high-rises, and packs of buses jockeying for space on the crowded streets. Yet even here, it is hard to find someone who will officially comment on Vivir Bien. After approaching top-level people in three different ministries, Ariel Zabala David, Director of Planning for the Ministry of Productive Development, agreed to talk.
Bolivia has always been characterized as an extractive country in mining and hydrocarbons. Formerly run by the private companies that didn't reinvest in the country, they took their profits out of the country. When the state took ownership of the productive resources, they were redistributed internally. So the surpluses that we get out of the mining and hydrocarbon extraction industries are being transferred via bonos and public investment to generate more manufacturing, more education, and more health. So we're redistributing these resources to create other sources of income.
While economic development is an important part of Vivir Bien for many, some people who live in the rainforest and grasslands of eastern Bolivia have yet another grasp on the concept. Giovanni Valdez is a guide in an eco-tourism project on the Amazonian land where his indigenous Quechua Tacana community lives.
We think, or I think, that Vivir Bien is protecting your land and using your land sustainably, because the majority of the people who live in the forest collect their food from what the jungle provides, and in exchange for that, you have to protect the spaces you have. I think that vivir bien depends on where you are and how you do it. And in Bolivia, you can't use one discourse for everyone. Bolivia is so diverse that the first thing you have to do is understand the different ways of life of the peoples in Bolivia.
O las diferentes pueblos en lo que es Bolivia.
So is it possible to merge plans for a growing industrial Bolivian economy with ideas about respect for the earth, collectivity, and harmony? Some people say it is possible, while others say no way. For Valdez, part of the confusion lies in the government's messages.
I think that the things that the government says in relation to Vivir Bien are contradictory in terms of what they express and what they do. One can't understand what they want or the message they're giving us to understand Vivir Bien.
¿Qué ellos ven en relación o qué ellos quieren decir?
Dario Kenner is the international spokesperson for the Bolivian Climate Change Platform, a non-governmental network made up of indigenous and grassroots groups from across the country.
Today in Bolivia, it's more of a philosophy. It's not actually a concrete kind of policy framework across all sectors of society and of the state. But there is a law of Mother Earth, which the Bolivian Climate Change Platform has worked on, which is an attempt to begin a transition to a model that would be Vivir Bien, to live well.
The Climate Change Platform also wants to take Vivir Bien to the international level at events like the upcoming UN Rio Plus 20 conference that is set to take place in Brazil this month. The topic of debate will be the green economy, which seeks to protect ecosystems in part through giving them an economic value. So could the green economy be an expression of Vivir Bien? The Bolivian Climate Change Platform and Kenner say no.
The green economy is effectively the next stage of the capitalist neoliberal model in that it will still seek limitless growth, it will still destroy the environment, it will still lead to great inequalities of wealth and power between people and countries.
But if it's so hard to reconcile Vivir Bien with a nation's economic development, and if everyone has a different idea of what a good and harmonious life is, what importance can this concept have? Perhaps it's as Aymara scholar Wainakuni says.
Entonces, ¿cómo podemos hacer? ¿Será sostenible?
Is the process of modernity and capitalization and exploitation sustainable at the rate we're going? Everyone agrees not. We have to change direction. We have to rethink life. That's Vivir Bien.
Eso es vivir bien.
Sarah Shariari, DW, La Paz, Bolivia.
For more information about Vivir Bien and other issues around the upcoming Rio Plus 20 conference, please go to our special page on the web at dw.de/Rio_20. Mobile phones are now a global trend, speeding globalization since people even in remote places have access to information quicker than ever before. But acquiring rare metals needed in the production of mobiles often leads to human rights violations and forced labor, for instance, in the Democratic Republic of Congo. A German Catholic aid organization is therefore trying to open consumers' eyes to cell phone production and human rights violations. It's called Clean Cell Phones Campaign. Rebecca Hillauer spoke with Father Justin about the situation in his country. He's the co-author of the human rights study Congo, A Balance of Violence. The report is presented by Kathleen Schuster.
The big problem is that there are still rebels in the countryside who are terrorizing the population there. They're exploiting the resources and using the money to buy weapons so that they can wage war against their fellow countrymen.
Father Justin Nkunzi Bayunjunzi knows what he's talking about. The pastor leads the Justice and Peace Commission for the Bukavu Archdiocese. The eastern Congo city sits close to the rebel region. Even though the civil war officially ended 10 years ago, peace still hasn't come to these areas. The villagers are at the mercy of the rebels. Women and young girls live in constant fear of being brutally assaulted. The rebels also degrade the men and boys by forcing them to extract natural resources from the ground.
We call them blood minerals because the only way to get them is through violence and suffering.
Human rights organizations estimate that the militias earn up to $225 million per year from the illegal trade. They also deplete the ground of the ore coltan, which yields a rare metal called tantalum. And tantalum is used in capacitors for digital cameras, laptops, and cell phones. Father Justin is demanding countries to require a certificate of origin from cell phone manufacturers. That way, people know where the raw materials came from. They must ban importing the so-called blood minerals, says the Congolese minister.
The plundered resources from Congo aren't shipped directly to Europe. Instead, they travel through many countries first. Each country declares them differently. This works because international firms are in cahoots with Congo rebels and middlemen in neighboring countries. It's no secret how the minerals make their way out of the country. The airlines and shipping companies that operate between Congo and other countries are public.
A UN report already denounced these grievances 10 years ago, but the illegal mineral trade continues to flourish. So the Catholic aid organization Missio launched the Clean Cell Phone Signature Campaign. Missio is calling for leading manufacturers to ensure that they don't use any, quote, blood tantalum from Congo in cell phones. The aid organization's financial support has also helped Father Justin establish 16 trauma centers in rebel areas for assault victims. He's also informing the population about the blood mineral business. Of course, profiteers don't like this. The priest barely escaped a bullet.
We really can't let this affect our work. We hope that the international community, which attaches such great importance to democracy and transparency, will finally do something about it. I dream that a democratic land like Germany will enact a law that will only allow for imports of certified minerals.
Father Justin hopes that the Clean Cell Phone Campaign will serve as a wake-up call to consumers, and that they then will put pressure on the cell phone manufacturers so that buying policies will change and drive fair trade with raw materials.
For example,
if, let's say, a representative from Nokia were to travel to Congo, talk to the people there and take a look at their working conditions in order to be convinced by the Missio campaign, that itself would be a huge achievement. There's a saying that the sun comes out after the rain. I hope that's what will happen in Congo one day.
Kathleen Schuster, DW.
And now Jesse Wingard takes a look at some development news.
Canada best G20 country to be a woman, India worst, report says. Policies that promote gender equality, safeguard against violence and exploitation, and access to healthcare make Canada the best place to be a woman amongst the world's biggest economies, a global poll of experts showed this week. Infanticide, child marriage and slavery made India the worst. Germany, Britain, Australia and France rounded out the top five countries out of the group of 20 in a perceptions poll of 370 gender specialists conducted by legal news service Trust Law.
The United States came in sixth, but polarised opinion due to concerns about lack of reproductive rights and affordable healthcare. At the other end of the scale, Saudi Arabia, where women are well educated but are banned from driving and only won the right to vote in 2011, polled second worst after India, followed by Indonesia, South Africa and Mexico. The poll, released ahead of the summit of G20 heads of state to be held in Mexico June 18 to 19, showed the reality for many women in many countries remains grim despite the introduction of laws and treaties on women's rights, experts said. World Bank warns developing countries over Europe. The World Bank on Tuesday warned developing countries to boost their defences against Europe's debt crisis, predicting years of volatility in a failing global economy. In its semi-annual report on worldwide economic conditions, the World Bank forecast the global economy would have weak growth of 2.5% in 2012, while developing countries' pace would slow to 5.3%, the most sluggish rate in the past 10 years. The report highlighted the need for developing countries to start reinvesting in human and physical capital, such as infrastructure, to ensure sustainable growth. WFP needs more money to help DRC refugees. The UN World Food Programme, WFP, has to support more than 530,000 Congolese refugees in the Great Lakes area of Rwanda and Uganda, as well as more than 370,000 internally displaced people in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Conflict in the region has been escalating in recent weeks. To feed and help the refugees in the region, the WFP needs more than $46 million US dollars for the next 6 months. Germany increases Syria aid. The German government has increased humanitarian aid for people in Syria. With continuing violence in Syria and the disintegrating humanitarian situation, Germany will increase its aid budget to Syria from 2.1 million euros to 7.9 million euros. German Foreign Minister Guido Westerwelle said that everything should be done to help those suffering from violence. He also called on the Syrian regime to give helpers access to Syria to support civilians.
That was Jesse Wingert with the development news. The fair trade movement was the subject of some controversy at the end of last month over Fairtrade USA changing its rules to allow large-scale plantations and private estates into the fair trade system. If large plantations now gain access to the fair trade system, they'll get premium payments they don't really need to be profitable, critics say. They are also concerned that small farmers could be pushed out of the market. And it's indeed the small farmers who need the scheme to survive. As Enrique Lopez and Antonio Guerrero report, fair trade has improved the lives of thousands of small Mexican coffee growers in Sierra Norte. This co-production by Deutsche Welle and Instituto Mexicano de la Radio is presented by Sue Cox.
Coffee harvest in Quetzalan. Emiliano Salazar reports on the last coffee harvest in Spanish and Nahuatl. Severe frost destroyed much of the crop. 125 representatives from thousands of small Mexican coffee growers in Sierra Norte in the northeast highlands of Puebla hang on every word Emiliano says. The coffee farmers belong to the regional agricultural cooperative Tosipan Titatanisque. In the indigenous Nahuatl language, Tosipan Titatanisque means together we will prevail. The cooperative has around 5,800 members, all producers of coffee and other agricultural products. Simultaneously, they joined the fair trade and organic farming operation. Fair trade essentially means financing and guaranteeing minimum prices, ensuring fair trade premiums are paid to coffee producers in Quetzalan. Leonardo Duran Olguin from Tosipan Titatanisque is happy about it, but he's still concerned about what the future holds.
We now know how important it is to have some sort of security, but we also have to prepare ourselves for the next stage of climatic change. We could be directly hit by it and need to make provisions for it now.
This time it has gone okay. Just before the onset of frost, Tosipan Titataniske farmers were able to export 670 sacks of their gold coffee under fair trade conditions to Cafe Oro. 62% of their coffee went to fair trade company Gepa, based in Wuppertal in Germany. Although the cooperative has been active in fair trade for a number of years, they've only been working for a short time with the company.
The first delivery to Gepa was of such good quality that they not only paid the minimum price for the fair trade coffee, but a premium price. So we built the first factory for Gepa. The first lot of coffee was finished, and it was the best. That was before the frost. Since then, instead of paying the normal price, we get paid $5 for 50 kilograms.
The high income they receive through fair trade quality coffee benefits the community, says cooperative member Emiliano Salazar. Ese premio que se nos da
solo es un recurso. We share the profit. We make sure it's equally distributed amongst the community where the coffee comes from. Eso se reparte
equitativamente. Fair trade guarantees coffee growers a minimum price on world market levels, which covers both production and the cost of living. Additionally, the fair trade premium is paid with the intention of promoting social projects. Through their cooperative and the use of the fair trade premium, members of the Tosipan Titataniske and the Quetzalan community have already achieved so much. They've created kindergartens, schools and medical centres, provided agricultural training and opened shops. The cooperative has even entered the eco-tourism sector, with a hotel, small chalets and cabins in the forests. Up until now, the Quetzalan has managed to conserve much of its natural beauty and indigenous heritage. Several times a day, the village is lost amongst the clouds. 900 metres above sea level, with a mild climate and regular rainfall, the area around Quetzalan is perfect, not only for growing coffee, but also for pepper, vanilla and honey. The region was already a commercial mecca before the Spanish arrived in 1522. Trading conditions of fair trade and the production of organic coffee have changed since then, benefiting farmers and their communities. Before, they didn't have the opportunity to market their coffee. They had to rely on selling their harvest well below the market price to middlemen, known as coyotes. The coyotes were anything but timid. Often violence was involved, recalls Francisco Garcia Salazar.
What the coyote said, that's what you had to do. For example, when he commanded, "You have to sell to me because I'm paying." If you didn't do that, he threatened to take away your land. Early on, that's what happened to the older people, the ones who couldn't defend themselves.
It wasn't only the coyotes who wanted to exploit the coffee farmers, says José Epifanio García López.
In 1984,
government experts told us we needed to use chemicals. The government wanted to boost coffee production and make a profit. My mother said, "Only God alone and the earth know how much you'll make, not the government nor fertilizer. The state gave you the chemicals so that it leached the soil and made the government rich. Then they took the money and you are worse off than before." Enriquezca este gobierno, se lleve la lana y tú te quedes más jodido.
Fair trade made it possible for thousands of people in the region to have a better life. And it's not only benefited small farmers in the cooperative, says Joaquim Ojeda.
Comercio justo nos califica también el
Fair trade has also shown us that we are the people who have been helped by the work. We have been treated well. Because for coffee cultivation, you have to have a large workforce. You can't do it yourself. With the harvest and all the other work, you have to be able to have help.
This is only possible because fair trade guarantees producers a fixed price, which enables producers to pay their workers appropriately. Appreciation for the work done and respect shown in the area is an added bonus. Amongst the indigenous peoples, a new self-confidence grew. Jaime Cortez Perez from the Totonaca tribe.
We've belonged to the organization for 6 years now. We were told not to be ashamed of our dialect or our language. There has been a gradual loss of our language amongst young people. The organization has made it clear that there is no reason why we should lose our tradition or to be ashamed. Instead, that we should continue to follow the examples set by our ancestors.
Despite all the positives, this does not solve the problem of fair trade. A particular challenge is the varying levels of productivity. René Avia Nieto from Ame Café, a civil association bringing together producers, importers, exporters and government officials of the Mexican coffee industry.
1999-2000 was the last major cycle of production in Mexico, with a harvest of almost 6.2 million bags of coffee. In recent years, we've not had more than 4.5 million bags. Undoubtedly, the coffee sector has great social importance. It's become an industry where the producers are treated fairly, but still, they're not as productive as in other countries. It's not enough to say that the land is environmentally friendly and the workers are being treated fairly. The land also has to be as productive as possible.
But greater productivity does not protect coffee growers against the speculative, market-driven world. Not even those involved in fair trade, receiving a minimum price, get away with it. Because it is rare that they are able to sell their entire harvest under fair trade conditions. The remainder, often a greater percentage, can at best be traded at world market prices. The market price for coffee is exposed to great fluctuations. Revenue from sales outside fair trade structures make it rather unpredictable. Additionally, farmers in Quetzalan have to compete with the international market. In Indonesia, coffee production has risen sharply, and the quality of Colombian coffee doesn't match that from Quetzalan.
Las políticas gubernamentales.
Unfortunately, government policy to date doesn't support our industry. We've had to overcome many obstacles. Big corporations are exploiting the resources that should be available to those who need it the most. The fight to ensure life on the land continues and enough food is available for all.
Says Eduardo Rojo from the non-governmental organization Comercio Justo México. He expresses that fair trade cannot solve all problems, not by itself anyway.
It seems to me we're at a point in time at which we as a society will react and kick off these kinds of initiatives so that in 10 years' time, they'll be one of the factors moving the country ahead onto a better future.
And that was a co-production by Deutsche Welle and Instituto Mexicano de la Radio, presented by Sue Cox. And that's all we have for you today. If you'd like to listen to this show again or past episodes, please go to dw.de/globalization. World in Progress will be back next week at the same time with a new edition. On behalf of today's studio team, Marion Colina and Eliane Giaducci, I'm Anke Rasper saying thanks for listening and goodbye.